Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. Very busy day here on KOAL. We have Drive Time Sports right now, and then coming up at 5 o'clock, we're going to begin our pregame coverage of tonight's live action. The Emory Spartan boys basketball team continuing the season on the road against the Union Cougars. That'll come up at 5 o'clock. So I'm with you throughout the afternoon. And on today's show, we are going to talk heavy college football, gearing up for the biggest weekend of the season for the sport itself. Of course, we have a solid matchup tonight in the Cotton Bowl as USC takes on Ohio State. We're going to talk a bit about that game, and we'll look ahead to Monday. We have some excellent New Year's Day matchups, including the college football playoff, which will feature Clemson and Alabama and Georgia and Oklahoma. And so some heavy college football talk today. Aside from that, I do want to talk about BYU. In fact, we're going to bring in Tyson Whiting from ESPN 960 in Utah County. He covers BYU football because we talked a lot about the Utah Utes this week. And we can't forget about Utah State, by the way. They're in a bowl game tonight as well. But with all that being said, BYU not bowling. Several coaching changes have been made to the staff this week. I love a couple of them. I think Kalani Sitake was hiring for his job. I think it's really that simple. I think Sitake's on the hot seat for BYU next season, and it's not squarely because of a win and loss type mentality at BYU. There's been some off the field issues as well with BYU. And I think there was an inexperienced coaching staff. And Sitake, this last go around, was hiring for experience, and I think he knocked it out of the park. We're going to get Tyson Whiting's perspective on this as well, and what does the future look like for BYU, who again next season will have an extremely tough schedule to start the year. It'll pewter off a little bit at the end, but we'll talk some BYU football on the show today as well. Let's dive into some Major League Baseball content. The Colorado Rockies made a big deal today. They signed right-handed reliever Wade Davis, who saved 32 games for the Cubs last season. He agreed to a deal with the Rockies, a three-year, $52 million deal. ESPN's Jerry Krasnick was the first to report this today. Davis's agreement is for 3 years and, again, $52 million. The contract does include a vesting player option that can increase the value to 4 years and $66 million if he finishes 30 games in 2020 and picks up his option. So sources also said the Cubs were willing to go only 2 years in the deal to bring Davis back, who was nearly perfect last year as a closer. Blew a save opportunity for the first time in late September, had a career high in saves while sporting a 2.3 ERA. Definitely the Cubs got their worth out of Wade Davis. Now he's on his way to Colorado. And Bud Black and Steve Foster, Bud Black the manager for the Rockies, Steve Foster the pitching coach, played a significant role in getting Davis to Colorado. One of my big complaints about the Rockies last season on the diamond was that they really didn't address the pitching rotation at the deadline. And I thought the Rockies were major players. They get into the wild card. They had no answer for the Arizona Diamondbacks, who had a legitimate ace in Zach Greinke. Davis obviously doesn't fix that, but he shores up the bullpen. And if Colorado was not able to bring in a legitimate number one option, I'm not talking about a number two or a number three guy, a legitimate one man, you know, a legitimate all-star starting caliber pitcher, which I don't think they're going to be able to do this offseason, you have to shore up the bullpen, especially in a hitters-friendly park like Coors Field. This is a pretty good signing, to say the least, for the Rockies. Kind of came out of the blue, at least from my perspective. I didn't see this coming. But the Rockies do land Wade Davis today on a three-year, $52 million deal. Let's move over to the NFL. We're going into Week 17. And there are some big matchups, a lot of different scenarios that could play out for the postseason. We'll know Sunday night because there's no night games. Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, that's it. We'll know Sunday night just who is going to be playing who in the NFL playoffs. We know in the NFC, really only one team on the outside looking in that could still sneak in, and that's the Seattle Seahawks. And I actually don't think that the Seahawks' odds of getting in are as bad as everyone claims to be. You know, all this talk about the NFC South getting three teams in. Yeah, Atlanta controls their own destiny, but at the same time, they don't have a cakewalk game this weekend, and Seattle has a favorable matchup in Arizona. The Seahawks could sneak in. A lot of different scenarios that are going to play out. One team that has absolutely no playoff meaning at all, it's the Indianapolis Colts. And while they did not have Andrew Luck all season long, some good news came out today. Andrew Luck does not believe he will need a second surgery on his right shoulder. Spent the past 6 weeks working with a trainer in the Netherlands. He says he feels pretty good to go. He thinks he may be set next season. He had right shoulder surgery about a year ago. Went to Europe after the Colts gave him a cortisone shot, shut him down from practicing, and then they eventually put him on the IR back in early November because of just continued soreness in that right shoulder. We talked about Andrew Luck yesterday, and should the Colts entertain the idea of moving Luck? It's not a fun conversation if you're a Colt fan, but considering that Indianapolis is probably going to have a top three pick this year, I think it's a legitimate conversation that, you know, is worthy. I don't think it's as abstract or, you know, I think it's a legitimate conversation. I wouldn't want to trade Andrew Luck. But again, I think there are teams out there that would be willing to take a risk on him. Let's move away from the NFL. We'll jump back over to college football, take a look at some of the matchups that we have coming up tonight. Again, right now, Wake Forest and Texas A&M are going at it. The Belk Bowl, also the Sun Bowl featuring NC State and Arizona State. And we also have Kentucky and Northwestern going at it right now. That game is on national television. And about 30 minutes ago, New Mexico State and Utah State kicked off in the Arizona Bowl. Tonight, one matchup, and it is worthy of stealing the primetime spotlight. USC taking on Ohio State, 6:30 kickoff, and this one will probably be Sam Darnold's last game at the college level. I would expect him to go pro at the end of the season. Be surprised if he didn't. Plus, Ohio State, the first team left out of the college football playoff with a number 5 ranking. Tomorrow for college football, it's a great day as well. The Tax Slayer Bowl, as ridiculous as that sounds, it does feature Lamar Jackson. And I want to talk about Lamar Jackson on the show today because, to me, this kid is going to go down as one of the most underappreciated college football players in the last 20 years. You know, he won the Heisman last year. You say, how could he be so underappreciated? He was a victim of his own success his junior year. And I always bring up a name when we talk about the greatest college football players that I personally have watched. I go back to Tommy Frazier, quarterback for Nebraska. To me, Tommy Frazier was an unbelievable college football player. I think it's fair to put Lamar Jackson in that same category. In fact, he didn't win the Heisman this year because of the success that he had last year. And without him, Louisville's not even remotely close to going to a bowl game, in my opinion. I think this kid is fantastic, and his college football career will come to an end tomorrow as Louisville takes on Mississippi State in the Tax Slayer Bowl. Let's look at the NBA. The Utah Jazz do not play tonight. We do have a full slate of games, though, and they begin here in the 5 o'clock hour, next hour, actually, as Houston takes on Washington. Houston had a collapse like anything I've seen last night. I don't know if you watched the end of this game. The Celtics were down 26 points against the Rockets. They rally back. They cut it to 1. James Harden is called for an offensive foul with 10 seconds left in the game, and that gives Boston the ball underneath their own basket. They inbound it. Horford scores. It's a 1-point lead. Houston has no timeouts left. Harden is called for another foul, offensive foul, before the ball is even inbounded. Gives it back to Boston. The game was over. It was crazy the way that game came to an end last night, and they both were legitimate calls in favor of the Boston Celtics. I couldn't believe what I was watching last night. Crazy, crazy game. James Harden, while guarded by Marcus Smart last night, 0 for 7, 4 turnovers. Houston with a chance to get back on the winning track tonight against Washington. Atlanta will travel to meet the Toronto Raptors. We get Brooklyn at Miami, Indiana at Chicago. The Pelicans will host the Mavericks. The Bucks travel on the road to meet the Thunder. 8 o'clock hour tonight on NBA TV, Phoenix at Sacramento. The Hornets will meet the Golden State Warriors nightcap tonight. The battle for LA is the Clippers meet the Lakers. Plenty coming up on this Friday edition of Drive Time Sports. When we return, we're going to talk to Antoine Staley of the USA Today and Athlon Sports. Plus, we'll talk some BYU football as well. It's all coming up
in 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmick.
on 750 AM KOAL.
So I came to the grave.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM, gearing up for a big weekend of college football. In fact, the action's going to get off and rolling tonight with the Cotton Bowl. We get USC and Ohio State and a ton of other storylines surrounding college football. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that, we have Antoine Staley of the USA Today and Athlon Sports joining us over the phone. Antoine, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate you making time again today.
Yeah, it's always nice to be with you again.
Hey, this is where it really, I guess it's the big payoff. I mean, you've joined us for the last 15, 16 weeks talking college football, and now we're heading for the biggest weekend of the entire season, and it actually kicks off tonight, as I just mentioned, with USC and Ohio State. I know it's not a college football playoff game, but look, at the beginning of the season, if you'd have told me we were going to get Ohio State and USC in a bowl game, I would have been pumped for it then. I'm pumped for it now. I love this matchup. I think it's one of the best bowl games that we have outside of the college football playoff.
I actually agree. Last time we saw Ohio State, they ended up beating Wisconsin. A lot of people thought they were going to get into the college football playoff. Obviously, that didn't happen because the Crimson Tide got in instead. So I'm curious to see how they react, how they play, considering the fact that they got left out of the Big Party, out of the Big Four. So, and then USC ended up winning the Pac-12 championship. So yeah, I think, like you said before, you alluded to, this is two teams that I think a lot of people said to be in the playoff this year, and it just didn't happen. But I think it's going to be an exciting matchup between the two teams, and I'm really curious to see how Ohio State plays, see if they're highly motivated.
Yeah, one of the things that I've always wanted Urban Meyer for is his ability to get his team ready to play. That wasn't the case last year when they were blown out by Clemson. Now they have an opportunity to go up against a USC squad. And again, you talk about motivation. If you flip and you look at what USC is doing, they brought in a four-star recruit at quarterback who we know next season is probably going to be the man if Sam Darnold does not come back. Do you get the sense that this is Darnold's last game at USC?
I would say so. I mean, anytime you're said to be a first-round pick and top five possibly, I don't see any reason why you should return to school. I know he's the redshirt sophomore, but yeah, he could be the number one pick in the draft, to be completely honest with you. The Cleveland Browns are looking for a quarterback. The New York Giants are looking for a quarterback. So yeah, I definitely think this is probably going to be his last game, and he's going to make it memorable. And remember last year in the bowl game against Penn State, that was kind of his coming out party to an extent. I know a lot of people saw him play before then, but that was really put Sam Darnold on the map, and I expect him to have a similar performance tonight.
As far as NFL prospects in this particular game tonight, one of the guys that I don't think should be overlooked is Ronald Jones, who's kind of been a staple for USC all year long. He's really moving up draft boards, and in fact, when you were talking about USC being a legitimate playoff contender at the beginning of the year, it seemed like the success of this offense wasn't necessarily on the shoulders of Sam Darnold. It was Ronald Jones.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think he's very underrated. A lot of people, unless you're out in the West Coast, you don't know much about him. Excellent runner, can also catch the ball at the backfield as well. And I was doing some draft work this week starting out, and I actually said that the Dolphins will be a team that I think could look at him coming up in this coming draft. I don't know exactly where he's going to go. I heard kind of second or third round, but the Dolphins, obviously, they have Kenyon Drake here, and they're going to need another back to kind of complement him, and I think Ronald Jones will be an excellent fit for Miami or really any team, just the way his style and I think he can be a good fit for any team, whether it be the Dolphins or any other of the 31 other teams in the league.
If we flip it, we talk about Ohio State prospects for the NFL draft in tonight's contest. One of the guys that's obviously going to get overlooked, I think it's because of the position that he plays, but let's not forget about Billy Price. I mean, again, this is an NFL prospect that's in this draft tonight. Again, sometimes the offensive linemen get overlooked a little bit. I mean, also for Ohio State, you got to talk about Denzel Ward. So, I mean, they have plenty of options. But Billy Price, I mean, he's got to be the top center prospect going into the NFL draft, and rightfully so.
Yeah, he can play multiple positions, can play guard, can play center. Definitely somebody you want on your offensive line, somebody that can just play a variety of different positions. And, yeah, I definitely think he's definitely moving up the draft boards. I remember at one point in time he was considered a second or third round pick. Now we're talking about him possibly sneaking in that first round. And, yeah, he definitely brings a lot of versatility, and somebody teams are definitely going to take a look at up in April's draft.
Now, once we get past tonight, we have a great slate of games tomorrow. One game that I don't believe is getting enough pub, and it's unfortunate. It's the final game of Lamar Jackson's brilliant career at Louisville in the Tax Slayer Bowl against Mississippi State. And Antoine, I think he's one of these players that maybe isn't getting the credit that he deserves now, but when we look back on what Lamar Jackson has been able to accomplish 10 years from now, he's going to go down as one of the better college football players of his generation. I think he's severely underrated when you talk about the attention, the lack of attention that he has gotten this season.
I agree. I think, let's look at that Louisville team. What would they be without him? They probably would be a team that might not even get to a bowl game. He's that valuable to the Louisville Cardinals. If they had any ounce of defense or a better team around them, we talk about Louisville in the college football playoff. But as it is, you're right. The numbers that he's putting up, rushing, passing the ball, the amount of touchdowns that he's scored the last couple of years, definitely one of the better quarterbacks of all time. And he's just not getting the props that he deserves, I think, for whatever reason. It's a lot of different reasons why people think, you know, he can't succeed in the NFL, but whether he does or not, he's definitely one of the better players that's put on a college football uniform.
I agree 100%. That's Louisville and Mississippi State tomorrow morning in the Tax Slayer Bowl. We have two games going into the afternoon tomorrow. Washington will take on Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl, Wisconsin and Miami in the Orange Bowl. These are, again, four teams that were legitimate players at one point in time of the season to get into the college football playoffs, still get terrific bowl games. Out of these two, which game do you like the most?
I'm curious in the Washington-Penn State game. I want to see how Washington play. We haven't seen them really since the Apple Cup, so I'm curious to see how they play. And Penn State kind of just, you know, went under the radar the last few weeks of the season once they were out of it. Obviously, the Ohio State loss was huge for them and really knocked them out of things. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an excellent matchup. Both teams, I believe, are evenly matched. You look at Miami and Wisconsin, the Hurricanes lost the last two games after starting the season 10-0. I'm curious to see how they come out and play, despite the fact that they've lost those last couple of games. And then you got Wisconsin, who was undefeated until the Big Ten Championship, but ended up losing to Ohio State. So that is going to be a very intriguing matchup there as well.
I think looking at it, I mean, from the Big Ten, in my opinion, outside of Ohio State, which, again, this is a coin flip, Wisconsin was definitely the most impressive Big Ten team throughout the season. I would like Wisconsin to beat Miami. And as far as the Pac-12 goes, Washington had a couple of slip-ups throughout the season that just didn't look very good. But at the same time,
Yeah. To
me, they seem to be the better team in comparison to Penn State.
Yeah, I think they're more the complete team right now. You know, they're expected. I know they had the hiccup against Arizona State earlier this year, but yeah, I think just especially what they have going on. Obviously, Browning's still there, still a solid quarterback, and I think they're probably the more complete team. But I do expect it to be a really good game, and I'm sure Barkley from Penn State is going to want to have a great game and likely his last game before he exits to the NFL.
Yeah, we were talking about potential number one picks. I mean, he's a very legitimate possibility to be a top three or four pick in this NFL draft.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think he's going to be. You look at the team like. Well, the 49ers are kind of playing their way out of the top 10, possibly. They keep winning, but I thought that might be a good spot for him there in San Francisco. You already got a quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo who's been outstanding in the short sample size. You get a running back like Barkley and get some more players around him. I think that might be exactly what the 49ers need to maybe take the next step and possibly be a playoff team next year.
You can see Saquon Barkley sharing a backfield with Andrew Luck next season in Indianapolis. It seems like a seamless fit right now.
That would work out too as well. You know, Frank Gore's still trucking along, but he's getting up there in age, and at some point you definitely want to have a younger running back option there. I think that would be a good fit as well. It's a number of places he could go.
Right.
He's just that good and that skilled, and it wouldn't shock me if the Colts were to select him there early in the draft.
Again, we're being joined right now by Antoine Staley of the Palm Beach, or excuse me, no longer of the Palm Beach Post. Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports in the USA Today. I get that. I threw that in there because you're at Dolphins practice right now, right?
Yes, I am. they're having the last practice of the season. So, yes, I'm here right now talking to you, watching them practice.
Antoine, let's talk about New Year's Day games. We have some excellent matchups. Michigan and South Carolina in the Outback Bowl. Central Florida and Auburn in the Peach Bowl. Notre Dame, LSU in the Citrus Bowl. We get Georgia and Oklahoma, obviously, and Alabama and Clemson. A terrific day for college football. The three games that serve as appetizers before we move into the college football playoffs. Tough to find more intriguing matchups.
Oh, it definitely is. I'm really interested to see that Auburn Central Florida game. Obviously, Scott Frost took over took the scepter job in Nebraska, but he's still there coaching Central Florida, coaching the Knights up for that for that Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. And I'm curious, these things can go one or two ways. Either the team can go out there highly motivated, obviously want to win for Scott Frost, or it could go the complete opposite way as well, and they come out lackluster. So I'm curious to see how they come out and perform well. And Auburn, we thought Auburn might be a team that, once they beat Alabama, would get into the college football playoff. Obviously, they didn't happen. They got beat down by Georgia, and just kind of their offense just was just suffocated pretty much by the Georgia Bulldog defense. So I'm curious to see how they come out and how they get back and roll in the passing game and also running the football.
As far as Michigan and South Carolina goes, how important is that game for Jim Harbaugh with everything that happened throughout this season? Now, how important is this bowl game, all things considered?
I think it's very important. We've got people that are criticizing him his first 3 years, saying that he hasn't done enough to elevate the Michigan program. And what it boils down to is just him beating Ohio State. That's the thing he really needs to do and win a Big Ten championship. If he can do that, then I think the critics will start to go away a little bit. I know Amani Toomer, who's also a Michigan alum, criticized Harbaugh saying that he's not done a good enough job. I think he has, but it's just the fact of being Ohio State and winning the Big Ten championship. And that's just the two things that have eluded him. So, yeah, you don't want to go in the next season on a losing streak, especially losing to a team like, nothing taking anything away from South Carolina. I think they're a much improved football team, but you're Michigan, and you're supposed to beat teams like this. So if you were to lose this game, the Outback Bowl game to South Carolina, I think the critics will start to get rumbling there in Ann Arbor.
We'll end by talking about the main course Monday night, Georgia, Oklahoma, Alabama, Clemson. The first contest is going to start at 3 p.m. Mountain Time. That's Georgia, Oklahoma. And then at 6:45, we get Bama, Clemson. Right off the bat, I've said this for the last month. I haven't changed my opinion. I like Georgia and Clemson in the national championship game. Your opinion?
I agree. I concur. I think those are the two best teams. I think they've clearly proven it. I would take Clemson. I think they're the outside the Syracuse loss, where they lost Kelly Bryant in the second half, I know Syracuse was still winning that football game. But outside of that, I feel like they've been the most consistent team throughout the course of the year. And they seem like they've gotten even better since they lost to Syracuse. They beat down a South Carolina team. That was, like I said, not a bad team, but they just completely just stifled them. And then they did the same thing to the Miami Hurricanes. So I expect them. I know a lot of people are going to take Alabama just simply because of the name, but if you take the names off the front of the jerseys, I think Clemson is just, far superior football team.
And as far as Clemson goes, this is an opportunity for Dabo to get back to the national championship game three consecutive seasons, which is highly impressive in itself. But am I wrong in saying that this is probably his most impressive coaching performance of his career, based on the fact that they are the defending national champions? I get that. But I've just been extremely impressed with his ability this year, Antoine.
Yeah. I mean, they were not supposed to be here. We thought Clemson was going to take a step back. All the players that they lost, obviously Deshaun Watson, highlights all the players that they lost in the NFL draft, but they just continue to reload, and they weren't even picked to win the ACC. Florida State was, if you remember correctly. They lose DeAndre Francois, and they just kind of go in the direction of Clemson. Not to say that they wouldn't have won the conference anyway, but yeah, it's just, yeah, this is, I agree with you. I think this is his most impressive job, considering the team, the youth of the team, and they're still very young. And it's no reason to think why next year, I mean, you have Kelly Bryant coming back and you have a lot of those same players coming back. They could probably be back in the national championship again for the fourth straight year if they can make it this year. Oh, yeah, this is a highly impressive job. And he's going to – Dabo has that Clemson program rolling, and they just stacking talent on top of talent. Sort of what Alabama's doing too.
You mentioned it was supposed to be Florida State. Boy, what a turn of events, right? Florida State played Southern Mississippi on a Wednesday morning. That's where Florida State played their postseason game. In the Independence Bowl, and Clemson's back in the national championship. Antoine Staley, always fun to get you on and talk college football. Let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
You find me at Athlon Sports. Also find me at Antoine Staley on Twitter and USA Today, writing for Dolphins Wire.
Antoine, it's always fun to get you on the show. Hopefully we can catch up again next week.
All right, then. Sounds good.
Again, that's Antoine Staley setting up a college football primer for us this weekend, game after game after game, and now we get into the big games, the big boys. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to talk more college football. We're going to talk BYU. They're not bowling, and there's obviously a lot of room for improvement. Changes already to the coaching staff. What's next for Cougar football? That's coming up next.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
BYU football hasn't been a whole lot to talk about in regard to the Cougars, but over the last couple of days, they've given us some storylines for next season. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that, we have Tyson Whiting. He's joining us right now over the phone to talk a little bit about BYU and some of the coaching changes. Tyson, of course, follows and reports for BYU, or reports on BYU with ESPN 960 out of Utah County. Tyson, it's been a while, but it's great to get you back on the show. Thank you.
That's certainly good to be here, Jordan.
Yeah, it was fun to talk with you, especially if we're talking BYU football. And you and I had this conversation a little bit off of the cuff before we hopped on air. There hasn't been a whole lot of positive regarding the BYU football team, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that these latest hires that Kalani Sitake has headed is definitely saying he's coaching for his job next season, right? I mean, that's the takeaway I get based on the experience that he is bringing in this offseason.
Absolutely, and, you know, BYU goes 4-9 at a place that's not necessarily used to going 4-9. It's the first four-winner last season for BYU since they won four games in 2003. So obviously changes need to be made, and that's where, you know, the offensive side of the football clearly has taken the blame for the 4-9 season as pretty much wholesale changes along the BYU offensive coaching staff. Only the Titans coach, Steve Clark, stays on the staff, new offensive coordinator with Jeff Grimes coming in from LSU as he was their offensive line coach. He brings in Aaron Roderick, Fessy Sitake, and Ryan Pugh to the coaching staff. And I got to say, I'm interested in the Aaron Roderick hire. And, you know, you guys talk a lot of Utes up there. And it's interesting because I'm interested in seeing what Aaron Roderick does outside of Kyle Whittingham's shadow. I'm interested in seeing what he is outside of a Kyle Whittingham regime where pretty much you run the football, you don't turn it over, and you kind of play to the strengths of your defense and punting game. And so I'm interested in seeing what Aaron Roderick is able to do at BYU, you know, being outside of the Kyle Whittingham shadow, because I imagine he's going to be a little bit more open. You're going to see a little bit more of a wide-open attack with Aaron Roderick as the new passing game coordinator than you ever did see when he was at Utah.
Yeah, you know, to me, that was the least surprising hire based on the, I guess you could say, the ties that Roderick has, you know, in consideration to Jeff Grimes as well, who we'll talk about in just a moment. But I think you hit it right on the head based on the fact that this guy has such strong ties with Kyle Whittingham. And let's be honest, one of the bigger gripes that I hear from Utah Ute fans is that the offense isn't as wide open as they would like it to be, especially with some of the athletes that Kyle Whittingham has brought in. For me, it's a seamless fit right now with what BYU has in bringing in Roderick and also bringing in Jeff Grimes. I think Sitake knocks these hires out of the park.
Absolutely, and I think what you see with a guy like Jeff Grimes that has experience as an offensive line coach and, you know, has a lot of experience in the running game, and Aaron Roderick, who has a lot of experience with a successful running game in his time at Utah, is that one of the things that BYU struggled with is they struggled to kind of maintain some sort of consistency with the running game, and part of that was play calling. You know, and in the month of November, Squall Canada looked like a really, really good running back. The question was, where was he in September and October? Why did it take till November to figure out, oh, this team could run the football a little bit? And you think about the quarterback play struggling, they kind of stuck with the passing game and stuck with the pass-first mentality a little bit too long. They had 418 passing attempts last season, 404 rushing attempts, and, you know, maybe 30 or 40 of those were sacks. And so you probably think of a BYU offense that really could run the football and probably should have been 55% run. And I think what Grimes and Roderick are going to do is they're going to play the strengths of the offense. And I think the strengths are going to be an offensive line that is going to improve in size, you know, the senior class that was, you know, pretty decent last season on the offense line, but a little bit undersized. They go out and you bring in a little bit bigger, a new group of offense linemen. I think that, you know, what this staff's going to do is they're going to play the strength of BYU's offense, and the strength last year was a running game, and for whatever reason, it took Ty Detmer 9-plus games to figure out, oh, we can run the football a little bit this season. So I think that's what fans are looking forward to seeing, is just a coaching staff that brings a little bit of experience to the table. And really, you know, you think about 2 years ago when they brought in this staff, you knew that inexperience was certainly a factor, and last season was probably the worst-case scenario with that staff and the lack of experience that they had, where it just looked like they just couldn't really figure it out. And by the time they could figure it out, they were 2-7, and it was just too little too late by that point.
Well, and speaking of the experience, I love the Grimes hire. Not only does he have the experience, but he's also been around national championship programs. I mean, he's coached national championship-type talent. And Tyson, when I look at this hire of Jeff Grimes, to me, this is the last stop before this guy becomes a college football head coach. That's how high I am on this hire. I really believe that once Grimes' time is done at BYU, he finds himself as a head coach at some program in this country.
Absolutely. And you think about how LSU pays assistant coaches. I don't know that he's necessarily getting a pay raise at BYU. I think more it's the fact that he wants to be an offensive coordinator. He knows that that's kind of his next step in his coaching career. It took him quite a while to get to that point. But, I think it's a great opportunity for him. And it was interesting. You saw kind of a vocal minority of BYU fans that were upset by getting rid of Ty Detmer just because, you know, he's a legend and whatnot, but I think a lot of people are really excited about the possibilities that Jeff Grimes has with the BYU because of experience. You know, you think about BYU not necessarily paying top dollars for assistant coaches based on Jeff Grimes' experience and what BYU usually pays for coordinators. I think it's a perfect match, and it's something where, you know, it might take him a couple games because he's never been a play caller, maybe take a couple of games there, but that's where a guy like Aaron Roderick comes into play. He's got play calling experience. Is going to, you know, hopefully make it a seamless transition for this BYU team next year.
Again, we're being joined right now by Tyson Whiting of ESPN 960 AM in Utah County as we talk BYU football. Tyson, let's talk about a couple of the other hires. Vesey Sitake was not really a huge surprise, although it was rumored that perhaps he would be first in line for the offensive coordinator duties.
He was certainly one of the candidates along with Roderick and Jeff Grimes. It just comes down to the fact that Sitake's 31 years old and doesn't really have much FBS experience, although the last couple years he was offensive coordinator at Weber State. And Weber State had a breakout year last year offensively. I mean, they were really good offensively. And really, you know, the receiver position at BYU was really a struggle. So you bring in a guy that's got experience not only as a good receiver, you know, when he was a player, but looks to be a young receivers coach that really can step in and improve this wide receiving core. And believe it or not, you know, the wide receiver that had the most catches this season was Aleva Hefo with 37.
Wow.
Only 37 catches
wow.
on the year was BYU's leading wide receiver. And so, you know, hopefully he can come in and improve a passing game, because after all, when you think about BYU football, you think about a passing game, and that was certainly lacking over the last couple of years with BYU's wide receivers. And so he comes in, he's young, he knows Kalani Sitake, obviously they're cousins. And, you know, I think that he's going to certainly be an upgrade over Ben Cahoon, who was a legend in the CFL, but for whatever reason just couldn't get through to his players.
You talk about the lack of a passing game and the lack of talent on the outside. Really, it was obvious from the very beginning this season, and I think BYU fans were kind of hoping that maybe it was a fluke, but I mean, you go back to the opening game in which Portland State, it was hard for BYU's receiving corps to gain separation against Portland State, and again, you were thinking, well, you know, just maybe his first game of the season, but it never improved, Tyson. It never got any better throughout the entire year. On the outside, BYU was unable to gain separation at any point in time this season.
Absolutely. That was a big issue, and it was weird because, you know, in fall camp you saw some guys that you thought had some speed. You know, you thought that Bo Tanner had some speed. He only ended up with 12 catches on the season. You know, you always heard about Jonah Trenuman running a 4.3 in fall conditioning drills. He only had 24 catches left for BYU. And so, you know, it's almost a chicken and the egg thing where, all right, the quarterback play wasn't very productive. You know, is that really the issue, or was the issue, you know, the receivers? And so it's hard to really tell. It's one of those things that, you know, the receiving core does lack speed, and really it's something BYU has tried to address in recruiting. They didn't necessarily succeed in getting, you know, wide receivers that have a lot of speed. They did get a couple receivers in their early signing period that do have some promise. Gunnar Romney in particular, 6'2", 190-pound receiver out of Arizona. They hope that he can come in and bring some speed. And, you know, Brayden Cosper from Bingham High, 6'3", but not necessarily big speed guys. I don't know that you're necessarily going to get that at BYU, which is why their leading receiver on the season was a tight end in Matt Bushman. And so it's something where you hope that Vesey Sitake can come in and work on it. But at the end of the day, you know, if the speed's not there, I mean, I don't know that separation really is going to ever be there at BYU, just because, you know, you're not necessarily going to get those 4-3 type of athletes.
Yeah, let's be honest. When looking at BYU and you bring up the recruitment right now, I don't think anyone expects BYU to bring in a top 40, top 30 recruit class. I don't know if it, at this stage of the game, especially as early as Satake is in his coaching tenure, I don't know if it's possible. It's an unreasonable expectation. But you would like to believe that this team could at least produce a top 70 recruit class. And looking at it right now, there's no 4-star athletes on this team. In fact, most of the damage, Tyson, has been done up front. You have a number of 3-star athletes that BYU has signed or gained commitments from.
Yeah, they got a few 3-star guys, but it's really kind of the lower end 3-star guys that maybe had one P5 offer. I mean, there was a couple guys that had an Oregon State offer, but not necessarily. You know, Boise State was after a couple of guys, and really, it's been on the offensive line where they've had some success in recruiting. They recruited 2 3-star offensive linemen. They recruited a couple defensive players, a defensive end and a linebacker that are 3-stars. But you don't necessarily see it from the receiving core. Gunnar Romney is the 1 3-star wide receiver that they recruited last year or this month. And, you know, it's something that's been an issue. And unfortunately, when you're 4-9 in a place like BYU that's not necessarily used to being 4-9, you kind of see those hits in recruiting. And so I think it's been a common theme for BYU where online, you know, on Twitter, you know, you'll see guys that were, you know, either committed to BYU or had BYU on their list kind of say, yeah, I'm kind of either opening up my recruitment or I'm not necessarily considering BYU at this time. And so it's been tough. BYU's going to have to, you know, find some diamonds in the rough, and really that's what they've been able to do. And you hope that some of these guys are 2-star prospects that didn't necessarily have more than a couple D1 offers. You hope that a couple of those guys pan out, but it's hard to build a football program on wishes and hopes. And, you know, you see some promise in a guy in his high school film, and it's hard to kind of build a program through hoping that, you know, you find those diamonds in the rough, that sort of thing. It's hard to be consistent that way, at least.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You spent a lot of time around the team, so this is maybe more of an opinionated question. How hot is the seat for Satake next season?
I think next year it's certainly a lot warmer than it is this year. I mean, it's one of those things where you look at 4-9, the offense took the hit for it this year with all the coaching changes that you've seen. But with this being his third year coming up next year, the schedule's not getting any easier. You know, it's one of those things where if they win the games they're supposed to, looks like they might win 6 games. I mean, the schedule is pretty difficult next season, so I think the seat is certainly hot for him. You think about Gary Croton. Yeah, in the early 2000s, he got 3 losing seasons in a row from 2002 through 2004, but that feels like a different era. That's pre-social media. That's pre, you know, a lot of those things. And so with this being year 3, especially in the dynamic that we're in right now, I think that he's got to at least get to a bowl game. And if he doesn't get to a bowl game, you might have to consider making a change. And at that point, you start thinking about, you know, candidates because – yeah, it's not necessarily that they went 4-9. It's the fact that they went 4-9 and lost to UMass and lost to, you know, they lost to East Carolina, and they didn't look good against Portland State, and they've had some off the field issues over the course of the football season. So all that you add up kind of, you know, says that this is kind of a make-or-break year for Kalani Sitake.
Yeah, and I always love the fans' perspective. You know, when you're going through the hiring process, and I can kind of apply this to when Sitake was given the job, fans are always really wanting that excitement type of game. You know, you want to play an exciting brand of football. Until that quote-unquote exciting brand of football doesn't necessarily work, it's amazing how fast fans would love to watch a boring brand of football as long as it's producing victories. I've always found that as an interesting dynamic.
Absolutely. You look at a team like Cal this last year, I mean, nobody ran a more exciting offense than Sonny Dykes, but yet he goes, you know, he leaves and you bring in Justin Wilcox, and even though they didn't necessarily see the results in the win-loss column, Cal looked like a much better football team this year. And, you know, it's one of those things where you look at Kyle Whittingham at Utah, I mean, I think everybody would love to just win their bowl game every season, win a consistent, you know, 7 to 10 games, and, you know, everybody would be like, well, the offense isn't exciting enough. Well, sometimes you get a more exciting offense and you kind of, you know, play that sort of football that can get you 5 wins and you can throw for 400 passing yards a game. But if you're not winning the game, you know, if you're not winning and your defense is giving up, you know, 400, you know, maybe 500 yards a game, it's certainly not something that's a winning formula. And sometimes, you know, when you got a good defense and you got a good special teams, you can win a lot of football games based on those, you know, playing to your strengths, and with those are your strengths, you got to live with that. And I think for BYU, their strengths are a running game and a defense that can get the job done here or there. And so I think that's what they got to live with. And unfortunately, fans are thinking, oh, we got to throw the ball 55 times a game because they're BYU and that's what they do. But as Al Davis said, it just win, baby. That's all that really matters, ultimately, at the end of the day.
You're 100% right. Tyson, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Absolutely. I'm doing the free intermission and post-game shows to the Utah Grizzlies this season. So catch me on the radio with that either on AM 1370 or ESPN 700. I'm also doing some stuff with the ESPN 960 covering the BYU Cougars. They've had a pretty good run with their basketball program lately, as they only have two losses on the season going into January. They got a big game tomorrow against St. Mary's. So, excuse me, you can also catch me on Twitter at Tyson on Sports.
Tyson, always fun. I appreciate the time. Hopefully we do it again soon.
All right, thanks for the time.
Again, that's Tyson Whiting of ESPN 960 in Utah County. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll put the final touches on this edition of the show.
Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarino on KOAL 750 AM.
We're set to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're going to move into the gym here in Roosevelt in just a moment. We're going to bring you Emory Spartan Basketball. Again, Emory on the road tonight taking on the Union Cougars. That's coming up inside the 5 o'clock hour. We'll take you to ABC News here in just a moment, then we'll get rolling with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. Again, coming up tonight, Emory at Union. Tomorrow, we have some Utah Jazz basketball coming your way. And of course, you have to enjoy the weekend with some college football. Best of edition of Drive Time Sports coming Monday for New Year's Day. Hopefully, you'll have a very safe and happy New Year's. And as always, I thank you so much for spending your afternoons with me here on Drive Time Sports. We are going on year 8 of the show. I can't believe how fast time has flown by, but it's been such a pleasure joining you in the afternoons. And again, I look forward to 8 more years. And also, do not forget, we have new sports programming coming on Sunday nights. Former Notre Dame quarterback Brady Quinn, he joins Jonas Knox for the Knox and Quinn Show. That's going to be some new programming added to KOAL on Sunday night. Highly recommend this show. I love it. I listen to the podcast of this show each week. College football, NFL football, news and notes from around the world of sports. I think you're really going to be happy with that. So we have Drive Time Sports. We have Emory High School, USU Eastern Basketball as well, the Utah Jazz, NASCAR, the Utah Utes Run Bar. Now we welcome in Knox and Quinn. Looking forward to that. I will catch you in just a few moments. We're going to switch locations, and Emory High School basketball is coming up next here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.